I'm going to try to talk a little slower than Richard. That was really fast. I could almost not follow it, and I kind of know what some of it is. So I have no relationships to disclose related to this project. So the first thing I want to highlight is what the target population is for the NIH toolbox. So the NIH toolbox is targeted for use by the general community dwelling population in the United States, everyone from ages 3 to 85. And for children, we do need require proxy respondents. In addition, because the toolbox is available in English and Spanish, participants have to be able to follow instructions in English or Spanish and have sufficient cognitive abilities to, am I shorter than everyone else? To understand and complete the informed consent process. And again, people with various functional disabilities are still eligible and part of the target population for the toolbox. But some people with auditory, visual, vestibular, motor functioning problems might not be able to do a particular test in the toolbox. But they're still a part of the target population that we're looking at. And so I'm going to talk about the norming phase of the toolbox. And in the previous years leading up to now, there's been a lot of work that Richard talked about with the development of these measures and a lot of pre-testing work that's gone into them, a lot of validation testing to confirm that these measures are working as we hope, some calibration testing for some of the item response theory-based measures. But now that we have the toolbox set, we're going to be doing a large norming study to collect data on representative values for the population. And this is also an opportunity to field test the entire toolbox as a unit. So all of those tests as they were being developed, the cognition group developed the cognition measures independently from what the sensory groups were doing. So this is an opportunity to have data across all of those different domains at once. And this is also the first time we're going to have a lot of substantial data for the Spanish versions of these tests. With the development in Spanish and the translation into Spanish, some data was collected throughout the development process, but this is really going to be the first big data collection for the Spanish language versions. And this is also an opportunity to conduct cross-domain analyses. Again, because we're going to have data on all domains, we'll be able to look at how cognitive functioning correlates with emotional health and things like that. So for the norming sample, we're going to be recruiting a total of 5,600 individuals across the age span from 3 to 85. And we'll be sampling these patients from existing recruitment databases. And this sample is going to be stratified by age, gender, and language. And language is going to be defined by the participant's preference. If people prefer to complete the assessments in English, they'll do them in English. If they prefer Spanish, they'll be in the Spanish strata. And so here's what the sample is going to look like for adults. And so we have stratification by, we don't have a pointer. So we have stratification by language, so English versus Spanish, as well as strata for males and females. And then we also have broken down by roughly 10-year age groups, and with some fuzziness at the ends, with 100 people in each of those cells. And then within each of those cells of 100, we're going to attempt to roughly match the general population distribution for race, ethnicity, and educational attainment within those cells. You'll notice that we collapsed a couple of those cells at the bottom. It's quite difficult to identify and recruit elderly Spanish-speaking individuals, so we made it a little easier on ourselves and combined those groups. And then this is what the sample looks like for children. And the table looks a little different here because we broke it down by single-year age bands so that we could look at the more rapid developmental changes. We wanted to make sure that we had enough children in each individual age group. So we have English and Spanish stratification again, half males, half females, and then the single-year age bands. Very few school-age children speak Spanish as their primary language and would want to complete different assessments in Spanish. Once you're in school, in an English-speaking school, you're going to want to do your testing in English. So it's really, really difficult to recruit Spanish-speaking school-age children. So we're just not doing it. And we're to maintain the sample size, we're increasing the sample size in the English-speaking group. And again, we're going to, within cells, attempt to match the general population distribution on race, ethnicity, and parents' educational attainment as a marker of socioeconomic status. So the actual norming is going to take place at 16 sites distributed around the U.S. All participants are going to complete all of the NIH toolbox measures, as well as a group of supplemental measures. And Richard mentioned the supplemental measures. These are things that kind of didn't make the cut for the full toolbox, either because of time constraints, because they didn't cover the full age band, but we still wanted to collect some data on them while we're getting this large sample. Not everyone is going to get all of the supplemental instruments. We're going to break down those 16 sites into groups of four, and each quarter of the sample will get a group of supplemental instruments. Another quarter of the sample will get a different group of supplemental instruments. So we'll have a little less data on those, but still some. We're also going to be collecting data on some additional questionnaires to help us answer some research questions related to some of these instruments that we're collecting. So this includes things like healthcare access, health behaviors, some other patient-reported outcome quality of life questionnaires. And those also are going to be stratified in those four groups. And then Richard mentioned we're also collecting genetic material. We have additional grant funding to do that. And that's going to be collected via a saliva collection, right? We're doing saliva. I think I've seen pictures, and we're going to ask people to spit in something, and we'll store it and test it later, and we'll be able to eventually use that data to look at genetic correlations with the toolbox measures. And the parent proxies are going to be required for all children. And I have this right. For the emotional health domain, the proxies are going to complete the measures for children ages 3 to 12. And then the actual children themselves complete the measures for, I think, 7 or 8 to 17. So you have a little overlap in the middle where both the children and the parents are completing the measures. But for the very young, it's only the parent assessment. And for the teenagers, we're getting the teenagers' assessments. For some of the additional questionnaires that ask about personal and household demographics, health history, other characteristics like that, we're using the parent proxies for all children age 3 to 17. And there are a few instruments where it's a little bit different. So in general, the time to complete the toolbox, as Richard mentioned, should be about 2 hours for pretty much anyone over the age of 8. And for children, it's going to be a little bit less. But this one to one and a half hour estimate doesn't include break time, so their assessment time is probably going to be similar once we account for that. And then the supplemental instruments and additional questionnaire should add another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on which group of four sites you're in. And there's a mix of measures where some of them are not going to be given to people in different age groups. And then we're also going to be doing some follow-up testing of the participants in this study. We'll be doing a one-week assessment to evaluate test-retest reliability in a subsample of 500 participants, half adults, half children, and distributed across those original strata. And then we'll also be doing a three-month follow-up assessment in another 500 participants, also half adults, half children, and again distributed across those original strata. And then at the end of data collection, we'll be doing some post-stratification adjustment by calculating weights using the method of iterative proportional fitting, or raking. And we've used this method for other studies. For example, the patient-reported outcomes measurement information system study sampled a large internet sample and did some weighting and compared it to some other studies to see how representative it was. But again, we're going to be doing a non-response bias analysis. And this, because the sample is targeted disproportionately to English and Spanish speaking individuals and males and females, we're going to do this analysis to look at non-response bias within those cells. So comparing women who are English speaking, who are age 18 to 29, characteristics of that group to the general U.S. population on things that we have data for things like geographic region and household income. And then the ultimate goal is to prepare reference tables that we can put in the overall manual for the toolbox. And we're going to be calculating descriptive statistics within each of those stratified cells to describe scores across all, is it 48 measures now, for reference to future users of the toolbox. And then we're going to be putting together an explanatory document so that people know how to use this to describe how the data were collected, how the weights were calculated, so everyone will have all that information to use as part of the manual. But there are also some other uses that we're going to be able to do with the norming data in addition to providing those reference tables. Item response theory was used to develop some of the measures, particularly the emotional health measures and the vocabulary and reading tests. And now that we'll have more data, we'll be able to look at the psychometric properties of those tests, again, using this large data set. And we're also going to be able to, in some cases, link some of the toolbox measures to legacy measures in cases where we have that data collected. We'll be able to do correlations across domains. So again, like I said, since we'll have the whole toolbox together, we're going to be able to look at associations between sensory functioning and motor functioning. And we'll also be able to answer some of those research questions that the additional measures and the supplemental instruments are going to allow us to do. And then once those reference tables are produced, future users of the toolbox will be able to use that information to calculate more informed sample size for their future studies, as well as having an external comparison group to compare their samples to. I have a few cautions for use for eventual future users of the toolbox, and they're not so much cautions as really just reminders of what the toolbox is and what it's intended to do, what the norming data collection is and what it's intended to be used for. So as Richard mentioned, these weren't designed with a clinical diagnostic purpose in mind. So while there will be reference tables that tell you what the mean and median value is for something in the general population, I think if people eventually want to use those to classify patients as, or participants as normal or abnormal on any of these measures of functioning, I think further research is going to be needed. We're not going to be able to just use the norming tables to say someone is 2 standard deviations away from the mean, therefore their endurance is abnormal and there's something wrong with them. And this also isn't going to represent a normal disease-free population. Again, the target population for the toolbox is pretty much everyone. If you can leave your house and get somewhere to do the toolbox testing, you're part of the target population. So you're not going to be able to do a study of people with heart disease and compare them to our tables that we're going to be publishing with the idea that these are people without heart disease. There's going to be people with heart disease, there's going to be people with vision problems, there are going to be people with depression. It's not a normal, healthy population, it's a normal, general population. And another caution is that for the supplemental instruments, because we're only administering them to a subset of the sample, we're going to have a little less precision there, so you need to be careful using those data once they're available. And then even after our post-stratification weighting, this is just a caution really for every study that you ever do, our sample still may be biased, so you always need to have that caution in mind. But even with all of these cautions in mind, the NIH Toolbox normative data set, once we have it, once we eventually start next year and then have data, will still be a valuable resource for investigators who are using our well-developed and validated measures. So again, for sample size calculations and comparison purposes, it will still be a very useful set of data. And we save the most time for Howard because his is the most interesting
slide. I can't tell you how thrilling it is to have presentations end 3 to 5 minutes ahead of schedule. I mean, we may actually get out of here not only on time, but ahead of time for the cocktails and other things that await, and for Richard to turn into a pumpkin at 6. But one thing that both, I must say, as a participant in this process, that both Richard and Jen's overviews neglect is the level of participation and the Sturm und Drang and the give and take and that has really essentially been the last 3 years. It's been amazing. You can't, it's almost clinically presented without that feel of how much tension filled and how much give and take time has gone into this process from some very amazing people around the country who have given a lot of time to this process. So I had to say that it almost wiped that slate clean, but not quite. So anyway, moving along, our next presenter, Howard Hoffman, is director of the Epidemiology and Biostatistics Program, the Division of Scientific Programs at the National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders, NIDCD, at the NIH, where he's led that program since 92, correct? The Institute's research program is focusing on determining prevalence, incidence, risk factors, preventive interventions for conditions or disorders in all of the mission areas of the Institute, which I'm sure Howard will go over, so I'll just quickly say hearing, balance, smell, taste, voice, speech, and language. I think I got them all. He's the NIDCD project officer for the hearing and balance components of the NHANES, National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, and many other epidemiologic studies supported by NIDCD and other institutes of the NIH, I might add, parenthetically, in the US and abroad. He served as the NIDCD coordinator for measuring and tracking the hearing health objectives in Healthy People 2010, and I think has continued into the 2020 projected set of objectives in his area. And I think it's expanded, has it not, Howard, from 8 to what is it up to now?
23.
Howard?